Hey, this is John Williams, and you found the Mincing Rascals again. Thanks for doing that. You hate those red light cameras, do you? Then you're going to hate how corrupt officials have been making money off of them. The Rascals take a dive there. And what's the point of digging up every lie Eddie Johnson, our former police superintendent, ever told? In Trumpland, the gang discusses the impeachment proceedings and the president's defense. We start with cloudy weather and the Kobe Bryant story. This week, it seems it's not just the things we say, it's also how we say them. You'll see why. Oh, and thanks for the swell ratings and shares. Here's your friendly reminder to please share the Mincing Rascals with your friends and write to me, John Williams, at WGNRadio.com. Today is Thursday, January 30th, 2020, at 12:44 in the afternoon. Hi, this is John Williams, and we are the Mincing Rascals, the podcast we record. Studios at WGN Radio, downtown Chicago, where it's cloudy for almost a record 8 or 9 days now.
Nobody knows for sure.
Listen for me weekdays from 1 to 3. Steve Bertrand.
I'm Steve Bertrand from the WGN Radio Newsroom.
I'm Austin Berg, Vice President of Marketing at the Illinois Policy Institute.
I'm Lisa Donovan with the Chicago Tribune. I write the Spin Politics newsletter out every afternoon.
I'm Eric Zorn, the baloney-free columnist from the Tribune.
Oh, shoot. Where did I see the word baloney this week?
It was funny. Sandoval.
Sandoval case.
Yes.
If there was a baloney company that he could have his bribes funneled through.
Yes.
So I have no baloney company.
Yeah, and when he said that, did he mean like a sausage-making company or a fake company, baloney company?
That's baloney.
He said a baloney company or something innocuous like that.
Right.
Well, that's redundant then if it's... I guess it's not time to quibble about grammar. But you guys all sound bright and up. I appreciate that because it has been so cloudy in Chicago. And we are debating in the newsrooms, and at least the electronic newsrooms, if we're on the precipice of breaking the record for the most consecutive cloudy days.
Well, tying the record would be 9. And so there was the conventional wisdom early this week that this being Thursday would have tied the record.
We would have been a 9 today.
I can divulge that there was an active debate among a television meteorological staff that shares the same company as us. And
on what constitutes cloudiness?
What number of the day was, and they took a day back. So now it's Friday, we'll tie it.
There must be a gizmo that measures, is it officially a cloudy day or not?
Well, if it's a record, the National Weather Service must keep track of it, or it wouldn't be a record.
I thought it was a week ago Tuesday that there was sun.
I feel like I saw some sun briefly on Saturday morning, and I celebrated it.
Well, that's the thing for a giant metropolitan area, too. I mean, some people do get clouds, some people do get sun. I don't remember seeing the sun forever. So I don't know.
It's weird, too. The clouds are like there are areas that are brown spots. I mean, it almost looks brown. I've never seen it like this.
Well, that's been a topic of interest in Chicago. But tell me if you agree that there are 3 topics in Chicago and America this week. Coronavirus, the impeachment, and Kobe Bryant. And all 3 have this in common, I think. We first talk about them, and then we talk about how we talk about them. We tell the story, and then we try and tell a further version of it, and that's where we get in trouble. For instance, 1 billion people will get the flu this year, so are we overdoing the scare in a virus that's affecting mostly people in China? And in Kobe's case, we went from the story to the detail that, well, there were other people on that plane, not just Kobe, including his daughter and 7 others, to the Washington Post reporter reposting charges against Kobe of sexual assault. And then the praise...
being suspended.
Say it again.
And being suspended for it.
Oh, yeah. And then the reporter gets suspended for posting that. And then they, I think, have reinstated her,
yes,
too, right?
Yes, they have.
I took some exception, not to the fact that Kobe was a good father, but that he gets inordinate praise for being a good father. You and I are good fathers or mothers. I think that's what most people are. But when a celebrity does something that the rest of us do every day, we sure do lionize them. So
we are now a careening culture, I think. We careen back and forth from one extreme to the other. And so when Kobe Bryant died, you know, we just went whole force toward him. And then there's resistance, and now we're careening back. I think, you know, and just one other point to make that, Lisa, please.
I apologize for taking a breath.
Were you loading up a big thought there, or were you just breathing?
No, I was just breathing.
I don't want to derail the Kobe conversation, but just to illuminate it a little bit, you know, you talked to Senator Durbin today, and talking about the the impeachment. How many Republicans do you think voted to acquit you guys, Bill Clinton, in his impeachment?
At least Susan Collins did, right?
He said there were 10.
10 voted
to acquit. Now, in this day and age, can you imagine, no matter what party the president was, that there would be 10 members of the other party to acquit? That really was
Durbin told us today they had 3 votes, but that was just to hear evidence.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, right, exactly, but we've become so partisan that the idea that 3 people might not vote in the way the majority leader wants.
Well, they're going to vote to acquit. It's just a question of whether they're going to vote. Those 3 people we're talking about.
I think that makes Steve's point even all the more so.
Right.
You can't even get 4 to say, let's just hear the evidence.
There's some talk that there's going to be a few Democrats peeling off. Doug Jones in Alabama, Manchin in West Virginia.
On the acquittal,
Yeah.
I don't know. Lindsey Graham and some other folks were talking this morning that they're probably ready to acquit tomorrow. And then Schiff was saying what is recently is like 11 o'clock. Well, we may have another plan.
I'm sorry. I totally did derail you.
It's okay. Poor Senator Durbin.
He's actually used to it by now.
Yeah. I actually thought you were getting at the whole idea of the, you know, Kobe Bryant is hero. But it's a devastating loss. When somebody is young and they are in the spotlight and they die, people do tend to sort of think they're heroes. But I think that this is a media problem. We need to check ourselves a little bit. I was watching the coverage almost, immediately just because it was everywhere. And they were talking to people outside the basketball stadium or basketball arena in L.A., before sort of the awards ceremony.
The basketball field is
basketball
Blue
field,
James
yes.
Said.
I'm sorry. The arena. I'm not sure what you call it. But the point is, you had people saying, Kobe got me through cancer and then cutting away, and Kobe got me through X, Y, and Z. And I don't really – I want to know, do you – let's just talk to people who know him. Let's have an account of this guy, what his life was, and warts and all. And let's get away from this sort of, the whole starstruck, we're lighting a bunch of candles kind of deal. Let's get at the heart of the story.
I thought the best coverage was NBA Tonight, right? Isn't that the name of the show? With Shaq and Charles and everybody? It was the most meaningful coverage of him as a person because they had people who were close to him in his life, achieved a lot with him, and talked about how it made them reflect on their own lives and how much they're working, and they don't tell other people they love them enough. I think that's the perfect kind of more emotional coverage,
sure.
But I agree with, you want to get at what were the facts of the story, which I don't think we're
not even
we still know.
To. Yeah, we still don't know that, and it's just ridiculous. If we have nothing to say, let's move on.
Part of that is you guys are print by and large, and this is electronic, and if right after it happened, you really had nothing to show except for smoke on a hill five
miles standing
away.
And watching the smoke.
Right,
and it's
a huge story, so you have to find a way to cover it. You're not going to get Shaq to talk to you then. What you get are the people who came of their own volition at the Staples Center. I don't really mean to defend it because I think it goes way, way overboard. So you have to cover the story somewhere, and if you're TV, you've got to show pictures of it.
And he did impact people's lives. Within the first 24 hours, shy of more information, I don't like that man on the street stuff sometimes too, Lisa, but telling the story of how Kobe Bryant impacted people's lives is a part of the story. I was trying to acknowledge or appreciate how a player like Kobe really does move them. You're making a hard face.
No, I agree. He's a great athlete. Basketball is my favorite sport. I love watching them on the field.
Would you say you like the way they dribble up and down the court?
Yes.
The field.
It's my favorite sport. I played it in high school. I get it.
Austin, shut up.
Great song. I don't understand this whole thing of, I guess maybe I'm too hard-edged, you're right, but is it people who really feel that way, or is it people who know the right soundbite that's going to get them on the air? And this is a discussion we had at home. Yes.
Talked about that?
Yes, sincerely, because it was like every other person, it got me through this, it got me through that.
Do you think those are legitimate offerings by those people?
Maybe the sport is a diversion from all the tough things that are going on, and he's a great player.
Well, people were truly devastated to hear the news. I mean, my sons reached out to me immediately, and really? I did to my family. I don't know Kobe Bryant, whatever, but I was like, oh my God, can you believe this?
Yeah, and so that's where I took issue with John a little bit, where I think you said he unified the world.
And, I kind of did. And by the way, I think he did.
Yeah, right, okay. And I said, hold on a second. This guy was a wonderful basketball player and felt keenly in L.A. Now, I think I underestimated the genuine feelings around the country, because I've talked to other people who really were impacted. I didn't feel that at all, so I think I was wrong a little bit. Yeah. But I also just think we go too far and too long. And, you know, the Grammys about Kobe Bryant, I get that. It was in the arena where he played, and it was just moments mm-hmm. later, hours later. I get that. You know, are sure. the Oscars going to be dominated by Kobe Bryant? I hope not.
Super Bowl ads might be.
But I want to say this, too. I noticed that a lot of the discussion pieces, because we went out to dinner, and everybody was talking about it at the restaurant. I mean, everybody was talking about it, but it was mostly men. There were not a lot of conversations about sort of, I think that there is a dividing line, whether people, I'm not saying that women didn't worship him, but there is a part of his history. He was accused of rape, and that is a very, very, that is a topic that's triggered people. Like, how come you're burying this in the 50th paragraph of this story about somebody?
Where should it have gone?
I'm not sure, but it should have been a discussion piece. And this Washington Post reporter who just posted a Daily Beast story about it, which gave details of that court case, the allegations, right? The victim.
And a statement was read in court. I read that piece
right.
too, that he agreed his attorney would read to her. And they said, okay,
yes.
we'll drop the charges, but we want this read. And shy of saying I did it, it was he did it.
No, I mean, he said he realized that he didn't, how she could see that it was not consensual. It was almost saying, I forced her.
The reporter who was suspended was involved with her own sexual abuse case at the Tribune. Not at the Tribune, but at the Washington Post.
Yeah.
Right, that resulted in the accused, well, the accused eventually left the paper. So the editor should have been at least a little more sensitive to who was posting it, I think, as
right.
well.
Right. Well, and what they were ticked off about, too, was the idea that people were coming after her. She screenshotted a message she got that called her horrible names. They were threatening her, but it revealed the emailer's
oh, really?
Identity. So that's what was at the core of it. And they wanted to sort of have this review, I guess, of how she was using her social media. But
I saw that email, and I got to say, I don't feel the least bit of sympathy for the person who sent that mail to her. And whether,
I don't either.
Whether their identity's revealed.
Whether he mailed, his email is out there. So he gets, I mean, as someone whose email address is public,
right.
people write to me all the time,
yeah.
and to have someone go like, well, I didn't get to call her all yeah. these horrible names in private. Well, when you write yeah. to a journalist, ladies and gentlemen, it's on the record.
Yeah.
But by the same token, if you're calling someone out for bad behavior, I can see why it looks like it's almost a, you know, a response. Retaliation. Yeah. yeah.
I'm curious, though, can you have a legitimate conversation about his death, the death of those other eight people, what an inspiration he was to people, what a great career he had, without reminding people that he was accused of sexual assault?
No, I think the answer to your question is no, you can't have a story, any right. kind of comprehensive story about Kobe Bryant's life and death without mentioning that. And I would think it would probably be, you know, somewhere in the top 25 paragraphs, not the first, second, or third, maybe between 10 and 25,
mm-hmm.
And maybe a sidebar on the piece, because it was a huge story. Was it 2003? It was
yeah.
a really big story. It cost him a whole bunch of endorsements, and when you look at that story also in relation to what's going on today, where
right.
someone like Garrison Keillor, evidently put his hand on a woman's back, and he's been completely canceled over that. Al Franken has to resign from the Senate because I guess he squeezed somebody's butt during a picture.
I still think Al Franken wants that back.
Well, I wish he
the resignation.
I think he does want it back, and I think, you know, we're in this moment now where these missteps that are far, far less serious than grabbing a hotel maid and raping her, which is what all the evidence suggests that Kobe Bryant did, is like, well, you know, he was young. Like, someone wrote me, he was young. Like, 24. Yeah.
Oh, no, she
yeah.
was 19. 24.
He was
27. So that would be 27. Oh, sorry.
So that would be a youthful indiscretion?
Yeah. yeah I
mean, and the deal was that when this first came out, this was sort of rapid fire. You know, we're in this digital age at this point where first he's accused, and everyone's like, oh, you know, this person is seeking a big payday, you know, and he said it's consensual. So we believe him, right? And then we find out a little bit drip, 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 and we find out she's from a wealthy family. we found out there's evidence, you know, at a hospital that she had been attacked. And then finally in court, was it a year later, this almost confession. It was a learning lesson. It was so graphic. It was kind of, I found it frightening. And when I read that Daily Beast story, it was just sort of like oh my God.
It did change my mind about how I felt about this whole arc.
And the Washington Post, it was just a really big stumble for them to do this out in public like that. I mean, mm-hmm. I can see calling her and saying, hey, can you take this down? Let's, you know.
Which they did, and she didn't do it quickly enough, right?
She was out of pocket or something, couldn't do it.
There were 300 people, 300 other members of the staff. I don't think our staff, I don't think we have 300 people at the Tribune anymore.
There is a backstory, too, at the Washington Post about this. He came in 2018.
Marty Baron
brought him into, or not Marty Baron. I mean, Marty Baron was part of this. He's the editor in chief. But Kobe came into the newsroom.
I'm sorry.
And kind of was given this sort of hero's welcome, right? He's posing for pictures. And I think that there were some people who were concerned about the image of that and addressed this on high with the bosses and then sort of felt, so that's part of the SPAC story too, is sort of, okay, take that down, take down what you said, and then sort of having this criticism out there of the bosses over the way he was treated and feeling like, okay, we're reporting on this Me Too stuff now. And this went a little bit farther than that, allegedly. So there's a bigger backstory there.
You can't win. When I was talking about it on the radio after it happened, I felt like, oh God, I sound like a fool that I'm not acknowledging the elephant in the room. And as soon as you do that, it feels like a pile-on that isn't necessary.
Well, I think you're spot on in that it did unify a very large number of people, and the fervor with which they lionized and defended him mm-hmm. for his accomplishments in his career was amazing. And not only, you know, with the Washington Post story, Ari Shaffir, a stand-up comedian, said something untoward about him on Instagram, and he just canceled his whole tour.
Yeah. You're kidding.
Right? It's amazing.
And I think
what
it does.
What did he say?
I can't remember off the top. It was essentially, you know, this guy was really problematic, and, you know, he wasn't dancing on his grave, but it was everything short of that. So I think the point being, though, it's such a male-dominated fan base that you could see why that stuff would overwhelm more nuanced discussions.
By the
of
way,
who he was
Garrison Keillor is playing Highland Park coming up in a few weeks. So tell the comedian that he can't.
Are you serious?
Right?
He
is.
Yeah.
Wow. They got rid of all of his old shows, his entire archive.
Yep.
On
did
on
they
NPR,
really?
And they had to rename Prairie Home Companion.
So, his
newspaper column.
Are we going to discuss the whole other storyline here about how you know, he's such a good girl dad? I was interested in that whole point. I am the youngest of eight kids, six older brothers, and I played sports, and I just felt like my dad wanted my sister and I to be the seventh and eighth brothers. Play basketball.
He wasn't
and volleyball.
A good girl dad.
No, he was.
Why
he was.
Is that even a thing?
I don't even understand
it. Are there girl moms and dad boys?
That's exactly what I thought.
If you are a parent of a child, it's incumbent upon you. It's natural to be a good parent. It's the exception that people aren't. So when a famous person does the things the rest of us mm-hmm. do instinctually, we say, isn't it great? He took her to the game.
Well, I don't know if that's... I mean, I think that when you have someone who's as famous as Kobe Bryant, you have a lot of people who famous parents who are pretty distant from their children. And the fact that he was really mm-hmm. involved in their life. Yeah, most of us are really involved in our kids' lives, but we're not mega celebrities.
So it's harder?
Or it might be easier.
You have
I'm
more
not
resources,
sure.
too, sure. by the way.
Yeah, that's true.
But to talk out of both sides of my mouth, if I may, there was something special about their relationship. She was a dynamic, up-and-coming basketball player, and this was their bond. They had this thing together. They were tight. So I did think that was heartbreaking. I think it's a heartbreaking story.
It's heartbreaking. I say that I was sadder about her death, about Gigi's.
Gigi,
I was sadder about her death than his. I mean, I was sad about both.
Sad for all the kids.
That was such a gut punch to have this promising young kid.
And the other two?
She didn't make the decision to fly the helicopter. She was not. I mean, I'm guessing we'll maybe find out that. Yeah, I mean, who made the decision to fly in that kind of weather?
That's what I want to know.
It certainly wasn't her.
I'll bet the mom wants to know. I'll bet that the parents and the family members want to know.
And what a lot. She had her entire. I mean, he had a long career, a lot of fame, a lot of success. She had all of that in front of her. Mm-hmm. It was all taken
and
away.
A lot of it was just a week before or 2 weeks before that video of him talking with her courtside and her basically finishing his sentence explaining what was happening on the court.
Kobe and his daughter in the building. breaking down the game.
I love this.
It's a father talking to his daughter about sports, where in an age where maybe you have a dad who wouldn't be accepting of a daughter that was super into that or something. You know, it's inspiring in that way, and it's a depiction of black fatherhood that's very strong too.
Well, that's a nice angle.
But those dads, I really think, Austin, those dads don't exist anymore, or they're few and far between.
What do you mean? What kind of dads?
Dads that don't want their kids to play sports or encourage that. I mean, you know, there was a stereotype from decades ago where, oh yeah, he really wanted to chip off the old block, and I think that's where these questions still come from. But I don't think that's the way men raise their kids now. I just don't. And the same for women wanting to, oh, I really wanted a little girl.
I think the most ferocious adult fans on the side of a girls' volleyball game are the fathers, the fathers are there, let's put it that way. Former State Senator Martin Sandoval has pleaded guilty to bribery and tax evasion charges. He was taking money from the red light camera company Safe Speed. When one of their executives wore an FBI wire, he got caught. He is cooperating with the investigation, says he takes full responsibility.
I take full responsibility for my actions. I'm ashamed and I'm sorry.
By the way, after you got caught and are forced to cooperate, essentially, that is the emptiest of statements, isn't it? I take full responsibility. But here's a guy getting salary, money under the table, and then Cicero was paying him $4,200 a month for services as a translator.
He's one of the best translators in the tri-state area. I mean, why wouldn't you hire Marty Sandoval for your translation
services? As Bruce Rauner said, you've got to pay up if you want the best available.
He's cooperating with the feds, so there must be somebody higher up the food chain, I guess. Who would that be?
Gee, who would that be?
I'm not being coy.
I mean, clearly the legislative leaders from both parties are the only ones higher up the food chain that I can really think of. I mean, you've got former Senate President Cullerton, you've got House Speaker Michael Madigan. I don't know who's higher up the food chain than that. There was an indication in the plea deal that there are there are a bunch of other dominoes that are going to fall here, and that some of these people may also come in and want to allocute, is that the term, where they fess up and agree, and they hope to get a lighter prison sentence. This could be really big. People are saying that it could be, you know, bigger than Graylor or Gambat or
that's
all
right.
These other,
I talked to a former federal prosecutor yesterday who said it's bigger than all of those. It's statewide. You know, with Graylor, you had the courts and people on the take there, but with this is he said he's never seen anything like it. He's now retired, but he's like, I've never seen anything like this. And he worked in New York too, where you have it stretching from Chicago to the suburbs to, you know, the state legislature, and then you have these bit, you know, the casino industries in part of this allegedly, and then you have a major utility who's here, you know, involved allegedly, and just the tentacles of this thing. He thinks it could be, you know, years before it's all done.
I think it's going to be a barn burner.
Well, and John, the U.S. attorney, the current U.S. attorney, John Lausch, even said that this is far from over. He came out and told
and
reporters
what's
that.
Driving this? So these red light camera company or companies want the municipalities to buy their services.
Sure.
So then they give money to the legislators in favor of votes or protective legislation to keep them in business.
Well, there was movement afoot in the legislature to ban the red light camera.
In fact, that's probably going to happen. There were three bills, but 2 weeks ago we spoke to one of the bill authors, and it sounded like he had the votes that they would, not only would they make them illegal, they would take the ones out. They would literally get rid of them.
Yeah, notably the bill Eric was talking about in 2015 passed the House that they would ban them, and Sandoval essentially sat on it.
Right.
And the implication is obviously that he was getting money under the table to do that. And by the way, such a pleasure speaking with John and Steve last week about red light cameras before this story broke, and we kind of called the shot.
You guessed it on our show a little bit about this. Is that the conversation you're talking about?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, we did this big report last fall. It was the first ever report to look at every red light camera in the state. And I wrote a column today about the fact that in 2016, just 3 years ago, we were talking about John Bills, Karen Finley, Red Flex in Chicago. All those people went to prison. And we see since 2014, when he was arrested, cameras steadily going down in Chicago. all the while the cameras in the suburbs are going up. So Chicago is too hot to touch.
Right.
Exactly. And now the ones in the suburbs make just as much money as the ones in Chicago.
Everybody's corrupt then, right? Because the legislators are taking money under the table, but they're getting it from these camera companies, right? Are there any honest...
Where does that money come from?
Red light cameras?
Like $5,000 a month they were giving Sandoval? Who writes that? Come take out a petty cash? Or how does that happen?
And I brought that up too. Or the ComEd, if there's something that ComEd... I mean, this money has to be accounted somewhere.
Translation expenses.
But it's got to be pretty high up. Whoever's approving this money or looking the other way for the money.
Yes, right. Especially if it's $225,000, which is one of the sums I saw.
Right. 250. 70,000 of it came from. That's the other piece of this. 70,000 of it came from the red light camera company. So where's the other? Where's the remaining money here?
And that's the question, right?
That's the one of the big questions.
And odds are it's from people in the construction industry who are trying to lobby him as Senate Transportation Committee chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee. That's what I'm interested about in terms of the anti-corruption reforms that are moving right now. Pritzker mentioned some of them in the state of the state.
It's no longer enough to sit idle while under the table deals, extortion or bribery persist. Protecting that culture or tolerating it is no longer acceptable.
And they're good. They're low-hanging fruit. Like, you know, have a revolving door restriction. You shouldn't have elected officials lobbying other units of government. These are good things.
Basic, though.
Very basic. But Sandoval, you got to remember, had his seat because of how the map was drawn. Madigan gave him that seat. He was Senate Transportation Committee chairman when the capital bill was passed. What capital projects are being canceled today that he had influence on that were corrupt? I would like to know the answer to that. You should take down red light cameras. These are the bigger questions around him that are more than just let's disclose when SafeSpeak gives money to people.
State lawmakers, the GOP leaders said yesterday, you know, what needs to happen is for there to be sort of this fair map legislation to pass. And what that means is, you know, every 10 years they've got to, they redo the boundaries based on census. And they're saying that sort of these lawmakers are saying, you know, whoever is in power, whichever party is in power, they have the muscle to sort of say this is how it's going to be remapped. And what it does is it saves the incumbents and it squeezes the Republicans.
Yeah. Not only does it squeeze Republicans out, in the case of Sandoval, the district was drawn in such a way where he would have a better shot at winning. And then also Madigan came in and cleared the field because he thought he wanted to shore up Hispanic support for Lisa's run for AG. So it's not just a question of extremism. It's picking the people you want who end up being the people like Marty Sandoval.
Well, what's the second district? Is that the one that I was in your book, Austin? I was looking at it. Don't you have
map? That's the ward map. Yeah,
that's the ward map.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hilarious.
Fioretti got drawn out of his own house, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, because he went up against Rome.
It was amazing. I mean, we can't do it on a podcast, but when you look at how some of these things are drawn, it looks corrupt. It just looks like somebody had an agenda.
And if you really want to turn people off, you know, make it so difficult to understand which district they live in, ward, whatever, you know, so that they just give up and don't pay attention. I mean, that there is sort of a basic level of that. People were sort of trying to figure out, okay, where do I vote now that they've done this redistricting? Who's my alderman? Who's my...
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, one last question for you all. Was this sort of like Blago and everybody knew, but nothing was happening until it happened? Did everybody know that Sandoval was corrupt and that this whole thing was hinky?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the fourth, so we talked about, you know, maps, bring down the red light cameras, Capitol bill. The other big question here is if the General Assembly had a competent and I shouldn't say competent, but an empowered legislative inspector general, this is exactly the type of work that a state official could be doing to root out who's getting money under the table and why is Marty Sandoval walking around in big fancy suits and fancy cars, right? That's something a legislative inspector general would do. That office is a total lapdog at the state level. It's been much improved at the city level in Chicago, and the state is lagging behind. So that's another reform people should be talking about.
A line I would have loved to hear from Pritzker in his speech on Wednesday was, I want people to save Illinois that they have the toughest anti-corruption laws in the country. And the fact that we don't, why not? And to make that just an absolute the main part of his agenda for this year is let's at the end of the year be able to say there is not a state in the country that has a tougher anti-corruption system than we do.
I think that that statement probably too would help him as he pushes this fair tax agenda, you know, that we're all going to be voting on in November. I think that would probably help him. It would lend some legitimacy. It would say, okay, this is, yeah, you're right, that we're going to get tough on this. The last bastion of this patronage system is going to go.
Four yes votes on the fair tax have since either been indicted or wore a wire to
really?
Avoid indictment.
Wow. Really? You guys are going to talk to you a little bit about what a topic that Eric suggested we talk about. It's Jussie Smollett again.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I'm sorry. But attorneys for...
Don't look at me like that, guys. Come on. This is a huge story. Jussie Smollett took up fully half of the Tribune's editorial endorsement session, the debate on Monday morning.
What was the debate about?
Well, it's the four candidates come in. It's a forum, but it's in the form of a debate. And fully half, Lisa was there.
I was there.
She was there witnessing this. Everyone from the editorial board, John Cass and I, we were like asking her what happened here. How did you go?
Kim Fox, you're asking these questions,
she gave you a clear and concise timeline. Right?
She gave us butkus once
right.
again. And you go on March 12th. They get a 16 count indictment, and then 18 days later, they never mind. What happened in those 18 days? And she has refused and refused. And you had her on your show, John. She doesn't say what happened. And this gets to her integrity and her honesty and her transparency, all the things that she is trying to run on. And it remains a really big story.
And yet it seems that, and you guys tell me you're more in tune to it, that I don't even know if there's any polling on it, but that she doesn't seem to be suffering too much.
I don't think there is any polling.
There isn't any polling, no.
But I would.
She's certainly picking up the endorsements.
She's getting a lot of endorsements, and she's probably going to win, I would guess, with a plurality, not a majority. She's probably going to get somewhere in the 40% range. She's got a lot of institutional
endorsements.
Backing.
Elizabeth Warren endorsed her, right?
And
Chewy Garcia, that's a big endorsement here.
Yeah.
Chicago Teachers Union had a massive
CTU, right? Okay, so we'll explain all of that to me then. Forget about Elizabeth Warren, but all these locals, they know what you're talking about, Eric. Why are they throwing
in? They like some of the things that I like about her agenda too, which is she is prioritizing violent crime. She's trying to make sure we're not locking people up for little stuff. And she's done a lot of good work with wrongful convictions. I mean, I think that there are things that you can they really point to. This is what she ran on, and she actually made good on a lot of that stuff. This stumble that she made that really is very glaring, and it concerns a lot of people who I talk to.
But what is she hiding? Why won't she be more clear about what happened?
I don't know. My guess is, and a lot of people see a lot more conspiracy in this than I do. My guess is that she thought that this would be a great way to highlight her focus on truly violent and threatening crime, and that she would do this, and everyone would say, "Oh, Kim, you are so just. You are so you have things in proportion here." That's why she. That's
you mean the fact that she was going to. Like
you mean this, by prosecuting
by
or,
not
or by not prosecuting
by, saying, by
yeah.
saying this is overkill. This was a stupid little thing that he did, forget it, we're going to move on and focus
that.
On rape.
I could see how you could sell that. Yeah.
I think that's what she thought, and then when it just came with incredible blowback, and it's amazing to me that she didn't have anybody in her office who said, Kim, this is not how this is going to play.
Or get Jussie Smollett on board.
Right.
So if we do this, have him say, yeah, I did it, and I shouldn't have done it, and you're a great town.
I mean, he was indignant, right? So he didn't dance his side of the dance.
Yeah. I've been truthful and consistent on every single level since day one. I would not be my mother's son if I was capable of one drop of what I've been accused of.
There's communication, and they're sort of following sort of, the law and procedure. Right? I mean, I talked to her office repeatedly, say, hey, what's happening with this case? And then they sent me an email saying, well, she's recused herself.
And talk to me a little bit about that community service. Who made that deal? When was it made? What are the very specifics of it? Can you talk about that?
John, I can't, like I said, Joe Magatz, who was our first assistant, negotiated that. And so I know, in broad strokes that he had done a couple days of community service here in Chicago and some other community service, I believe, back out west. But I can't tell you the specifics of that because, again, I was recused from the case.
You don't know the details of that?
I didn't inquire of the details of that. Again, I was recused.
But I'm sorry, Kim, but you haven't since? I mean, as we sit here now, you don't know the details of how that deal was worked out?
No.
I'm surprised by that. Aren't you curious?
No.
Well, what does that mean? And that sort of started the whole thing, you know.
I don't think we ever got it. I don't know that we yet have a clear definition.
We don't have it. No, we don't.
Of what that means or what she meant.
I believe that we've been told it was in the colloquial sense, where I'm going to, you know, just
when
sort
you're
of,
at dinner with your family, right. And you recuse yourself right. from the table.
I didn't know that attorneys got to drop that. Well, I mean it colloquially. I mean it's a legal term. It's not one that
she'd formally recused herself. Her office would have had to have stepped aside. They would have had to find a special prosecutor.
So then she could not have appointed her.
Which they have already now.
Yeah.
They have
but that's not even the thrust of the Jussie Smollett story this week. I mean, so it's that his attorneys are countersuing the city, and they want anything and everything that former police superintendent Eddie Johnson has ever said that was untruthful.
Because the city's taken him to court to get the expenses for the investigation.
City's right. taken
so
Jussie Smollett to court.
He's countersuing this right. part of
I understand that, but what does this... So then they say, okay, well then, tell us about the night that he was drunk
and... Eddie Johnson.
Eddie Johnson. I'm like, well, what does that have to do with Jussie Smollett?
Eddie Johnson was one of Jussie Smollett's harshest critics, right? Jussie Smollett goes on Good Morning America, makes this, you know, tells the story of how he was attacked in the middle of a downtown Chicago
street. Go back and watch that.
If the attackers are never found, how will you be able to heal?
I don't know. Let's just hope that they are. Let's not go there yet. I was talking to a friend, and I said, I just want them to find them. And she said, sweetie, they're not going to find them. That just made me so angry.
He's not a very good actor. Okay, keep going.
And then once sort of the tide changes, and he is accused of orchestrating this so-called homophobic and racist attack. Eddie Johnson goes on Good Morning America and is sort of the face of this. You know, he's innocent until proven guilty, but bam.
So where does it stand as of this morning?
So right now, as I said, he still has the presumption of innocent, and he'll get his opportunity in court if he chooses to go that route. But I can tell you this, Rob, there's mm-hmm. a lot more evidence that hasn't been presented yet that does not support the version that he gave.
Kind of how dare he make our city look like, you know, we're
It was poignant. Like,
yeah,
he was very poignant.
He was strong, though. How do you sort of unravel a police, you know, accounting at a police investigation? You go after their top guy, the guy that was the face of sort of saying he made our city look bad. He didn't tell the truth, et cetera, et cetera. And so what they're trying to come back at is saying how this guy's accusing us of being a liar. The mayor fired him for not telling the truth.
Right. And why
so we want to know about it.
And why should I have to pay for your investigation of me if your superintendent lied to police as well and you had to investigate him and you're not asking
right.
him to pay for that investigation?
Right. And they're asking how much is this investigation into the Johnson case? How much is that costing? Now, this is that case where Eddie Johnson was drinking. There's footage of it.
Well, I guess
it seems like trench warfare, right? Just among the lawyers here, right?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
I mean,
wouldn't a judge say, wait a minute, that I get your point, but that's really, that's not relevant here to what happened the night that...
It's a public relations move, and mm-hmm. it's a gotcha stunt, and it might prove effective.
It might prove effective because the one key thing, and I'm sure that these attorneys are watching this Ed Board meeting, Kim Fox said very specifically she couldn't talk to us because Dan Webb could be doing an investigation that could eventually lead to charges against Smollett.
We really have to hope that Dan Webb finishes up his investigation soon, so it'll give the candidates a chance to respond.
Oh, yeah, right,
to it,
right.
Because if it comes out, the primary election is on March 17th, mm-hmm. and if it comes out on March 20th, and if Kim Fox is defeated and this report exonerates her, or if Kim Fox wins and this report condemns her, that's just outrageous. And so Dan Webb has to finish his...
Well, I think if it sort of condemns her and it's a post-election, because remember he had I mean, whatever it wasn't very much, but he had contributed to her campaign. And I would have thought that they would have, you know, he's a great attorney. People have a lot of respect for him. I'm not questioning that. But just the optics of it, he'd contributed to her campaign years ago.
Regardless of what they find, the Chicago Teachers Union is 100% behind Kim Fox as the representative somehow of all teachers and, you know, the values that they care about. They feel like that should be directed towards
this Tony
race.
Preckwinkle's former chief of staff, and they're all behind Tony Preckwinkle. Right. So
what is your point, Austin?
It makes me thankful for the fact that people don't have to pay Chicago Teachers Union just to keep their job as a teacher if they don't want to anymore because of the 2018 Janice V. AFSCME decision. I mean, if what about what Kim Fox did in this scenario, not telling the full truth, not being forthright about what she did, screams values of educators to you, right? And I think there are a lot of teachers.
And your union dues are going to help her.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kristen McQuarrie posted on Twitter this week about all of the union dues monies that were going to Madigan, right? And it was we put her on our show a little bit about that because if I was a teacher or firefighter or all of these different construction people, private companies, the amount of money at the last minute that came pouring into Mike Madigan's campaign funds.
So December 31st was the most recent filing date, and it shows that he raised $5 million over the last 3 months of last year just in this political committee that he oversees. So, I mean, in the middle of all these scandals, set aside the state budget crisis, underfunded pensions, worst credit rating in the nation, unbalanced budgets. On top of that, he's experiencing some of his closest associates getting accused of sexual harassment and, oh yes, a federal corruption investigation. And yet he is raising gobs of money right and left.
I was kind of shocked by it, you guys. For one thing, I don't see the value in that investment. I mean,
you don't?
No, seriously, I don't like a straight up value of the investment.
Yeah, imagine it's just like SafeSpeed. You give money to the people who give you contracts, fat contracts.
Right.
It's a big return on investment.
But I mean the opposite. Yeah. Like, where's the legitimate value of that investment?
100%.
Because otherwise it just looks like you're just paying these people off.
As many people have said over the years, the scandal, the true scandal about American government is what's legal, not what's...
that is it, Eric. That's the point I'm trying to make.
My takeaway, too, from that is that, okay, somebody who is in power like that, I'm not saying him, but somebody who is in power like that, and has a hold, even when that person is gone, they will have a role in picking their successor. They will have a sort of a machine left over, and you want to make sure that you're sort of part of that party, right? I'm not saying anything about Madigan. I'm just saying, you know, it goes a lot farther than him. I understand what you're saying about the return on investment, but they're looking at the long game and the big picture.
Yeah, but $700,000, I believe, and a lot of it went towards settling a sexual misconduct case.
Right.
And I mean, imagine selling to your members that, you know, guys, seriously, this is in our best interest. The sad part about that is it is. And that's sad for the rest of us because it covers up bad behavior.
Eric, this will be the third week in a row that you've had a chance to opine on would you make the Bolton for Biden deal.
Right now it looks like they don't have the vote. The Democrats don't have the votes, that they're only going to be three at most Republicans voting for witnesses. And I think that the Democrats have got to pull something out of the hat. And they've been resisting mightily this idea that the Bidens would testify. And I think that the only chance they have right now, I think, is to come out and say, you got the Bidens, take them in exchange for Bolton. At least make that. I don't think the Republicans go for it for a second, but I think you need to get out in front of this because they're going to lose the vote. The verdict is going to go against them for sure. And so they need to have something to go back to their people and say, look, we tried. But this idea they've been arguing all week about, the Bidens aren't relevant. Of course they're not relevant. That's not the point. And this is a political exercise right now. And if they don't get... And the other thing, as I've said before, is I think that the Biden matter needs to be litigated in public. Right now, there was I saw a radio spot that Scott, the senator from Florida, I think, is airing. And he's basically saying Joe Biden went over to Ukraine and he held them hostage for $1 billion if they didn't fire the prosecutor. And you know that is so grossly misrepresents what actually happened there. But they're going to get away with it if Joe Biden's the nominee. This is going to be the story of the year. We're going to hear about about what about Burisma? What about Burisma is going to be? What about her emails all over again? And if Biden's not the nominee, it doesn't matter. So either way, they've got to get this done.
Kind of an interesting defense, too, right? That if what the president is doing for his political gain serves the nation's interest, this is what Alan Dershowitz said.
Your election is in the public interest. And if a president does something which he believes will help him get elected in the public interest, that cannot be the kind of quid pro quo that results in impeachment.
It's not an impeachable offense. It's collateral that it happened to benefit the president, or it's collateral that it happened to benefit the country. But as long as those two are linked together, then it's defensible.
Right. The quid pro quo is okay if the quo is legal, is what Dershowitz essentially said, right? And Ted Cruz was very, in a Ted Cruz way, asking a leading question about, hey, isn't it... What's the matter? Is a quid pro quo illegal or not? I mean, what is this impeachable or not?
Wasn't he making the point that if it's for the greater good, though, it didn't matter if it was legal or illegal, as long as it was for the greater good?
It was illegal. Didn't the General Accounting Office say that it was illegal to withhold those funds?
Well, yeah, but I mean, they can say whatever they want. I don't know what weight that carries. I mean, that's not law, their opinion is.
Go ahead, Austin.
No, GAO is often put out similar statements, not saying that they're wrong, but it's not the first time they've done it. Dershowitz, and really what's been so exhausting about this whole thing is trying to keep up with the logic of a lot of these people because it keeps changing. First it was it was a perfect conversation, and then it was, well, if it's a quid pro quo, what's wrong with the quid pro quo? And then maybe the third step is it was even an illegal quo. But who cares, because it's the president.
It had a legal aspect to it, which was because it served the public interest, if you define the public interest as Trump does, right, which is him getting reelected.
Anything good for the president.
It's godlike, isn't it?
I know. Anything good for the king is good for the kingdom.
But don't you think a lot of these talking points... I feel like everybody's decided where they're going to land on this vote in that chamber. I think all of this is for the public. Is it not? We are going to kick in primary season starting Monday with the Iowa caucus. And this is for voters at this point. This is all for a public audience, you know, maybe a little fodder for CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, but definitely...
Well, that's why I was wondering, Lisa, do you think that the way this goes is going to have repercussions, negative repercussions for Republican senators? 75% of America said they thought witnesses should be called, and the Republicans have been resolute on this, even in the face of this leaked transcript of his book. Do you think, all of you on this, do you think there's going to be negative repercussions?
I really don't, because I don't think a lot of people are tuning in. I do.
I think that some of the people like Cory Gardner in Colorado are going to find that voters in the middle there who were maybe inclined to support him, seeing how he ran and grabbed Trump's legs and hung on, will not be motivated to come out and vote for him. Because he didn't vote for witnesses. I think there's going to be some repercussions. I do.
I think to Lisa's point that, there's like a difference between sentiment and intensity. And the question is, how much do people care about this vote on the witnesses, even if they agree that they should be called, right? I think for the vast majority of people, they don't even understand where we are in the process of impeachment. It's just Congress in general mucking around with impeachment. But that said, these elections are won on the margin. So in a blue, purplish state like Colorado, maybe it ups the intensity of the Democrats by a little bit, but you got to account for the fact that it ups the intensity of the Republicans a little bit.
It's a great ad they ran. They're running in Arizona right now, where they basically talk about how she didn't want to have witnesses. It's going to be effective. Who's the senator from?
Not Murkowski.
McSally?
Yeah, that sounds right. McSally.
I'm sorry. So the Republicans are running an ad?
No, the Democrats are running the ads, or Democratic organization. I don't think it's a person from the a candidate.
But, against this female senator, yeah.
Right, and I think those ads are going to be blistering against the candidates who voted against witnesses in these.
That's an
states.
Interesting
Martha
point,
McSally,
though.
Yeah.
Right. So while it might, thank you for looking that up. So while it might not resonate nationally because it's just a fog for us, if it was a specific ad directed at a specific group of people in a state like Arizona or Illinois, and they said your guy or gal was not on board, and 75% of you were, more or less, then yeah. then maybe there will
she
be repercussions.
She didn't want to find out the truth. She wanted to keep... And John Bolton's story is going to come out, ladies and gentlemen. That book is going to be published.
Sure.
And then ultimately, you know, Mick Mulvaney's book is going to be published and Mike Pompeo's book is going to be published. So we're going to find out just how bad this was.
I'm just not sure. I guess we're all at this place where nobody trusts each other. That's why I think it's so interesting that you know, on the one hand, we have people saying, "I don't trust Trump at all. I don't believe anything he says or any of his people." But then you have somebody who's his former NSA coming out with a book, and it may not reflect, you know, very well on him. And now everybody's a true believer. You know, so I think that we're at this place where. Nobody believes anything.
Democrats like yeah. Bolton now. Schiff said as much. I like him more than I used to.
Well, right, and so I mean, it's just a strange thing to me to sort of see this shift. Like, okay, I don't believe anything any of these guys say, and now let's hold this up as sort of evidence of why I don't.
It's during the same week when Trump went to New Jersey to campaign for that Democratic turncoat.
Who
went from Democrat to Republican, who voted against him and has voted against him like 75% of the time. But he goes, he's running, he's supporting this newly minted Republican mm-hmm. over his.
Eric, poll, I was so. Disappointed at the beginning of the podcast. You know how you usually have some sort of obtuse introduction of yourself, and I thought you were going to say, "I'm Eric Zorn."
I'll use that one next one.
Columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and I can find Ukraine on a map. Because my wife then gets out a map, and she goes, yes. Okay, it's one of these two. Which I think should be good enough for most of us. But if you're an NPR White House correspondent, then you ought to know where it is. And son of a gun, she did. Mr. Zorn, just tell everybody what I'm talking about here.
Well, there was this interview. An NPR reporter was interviewing Mike Pompeo and was pressing him on his dealings with Ukraine. He only wanted to talk about Iran. After they conclude the interview, he calls her back into his study, I guess, and
the living room of his office.
And reams her out in a profane fashion, telling nobody cares about Ukraine. You can't even find it on the map, I'll bet. She says, yes, I can. So he has a gopher come and bring him a map without any countries on it. I mean, who has that?
I know.
Aside from
tall order.
High school geography teachers.
And he came back in real time, like not the next day.
Yeah.
That's a hustle.
That seemed like it was a gotcha, maybe.
What?
And I would believe that. I mean, she's a Harvard grad with a degree in international studies or something.
Right.
And she has been a foreign correspondent, so she picked out Ukraine pretty easily. And
it's bigger than Belarus, for those of you that are looking for it.
And it's smaller than Kazakhstan. So anyway, and so then the next day, he claps back. You know, she goes on the air and talks about this, and the next day he claps back at her and talks about how dishonest she is.
He said she lied to me twice.
And then she produced the emails that show that they had agreed, in fact, to talk about Ukraine. And then in the meeting in the White House with Netanyahu and Trump, Pompeo is there, and Trump says something like, "You got her."
It's impressive.
That was very impressive, Mike. That reporter couldn't have done too good a job on you yesterday, huh? I think you did a good job on her, actually. That's good. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, nothing matters anymore, but boy, were the optics of that bad.
You know, nothing matters anymore. I think that should be our coat of arms for this podcast.
That's
it seems so true.
The Missing
it?
Rascals.
Doesn't
nothing matters,
matters anymore.
Let's dig in.
it's so true.
That yeah, I mean, so
the
I did you guys
rascals.
Yeah, did you guys read the Nihilist Rascals? Did you guys read her op-ed in the New York Times that she wrote, that NPR reporter?
Mm-hmm. I didn't.
So it was tough to suss out the point, but and I don't know if I can credibly say that this was her argument in the piece, but it was the way people were wielding her piece, so it's not on her. But people were sort of describing this as an attack on the First Amendment and an attack on the free press. And my view is, and Lisa, please correct me if I'm wrong, if you've got the Secretary of State like effing and jeffing you and bringing out maps and stuff, it seems like you're doing a great job. I mean, that's partially what you're there for.
If you're getting him that animated, you're asking the right questions.
And not saying what he did was not disrespectful. Of course it was. And not saying what Trump said wasn't disrespectful. Of course it was. But is attack on the press? I think
the point maybe was that he was saying, well, she talked about something that was off the record. I think maybe that's where some of the people were coming from. I did not read her op-ed, but I do think some folks were taking it that way, and that, oh, we had this agreement, and this is just sort of another example of sort of the fake news world that's been created.
But even some, pardon me, Lisa.
Sure.
Even some conservatives, though, were pushing back on his understanding of it was off the record. And they said, no, it absolutely was not.
Right.
Maybe the assistant was supposed to relay that message. Maybe they didn't, whatever. But you're the Secretary of State of the United States.
Yeah.
You ought to be able to handle this.
Yeah, well, and then, of course, he decided that he was going, he's got an overseas trip, and he's not going to let the NPR reporter, not this woman, but somebody
That'll
else, go on the trip.
I know.
And what's the point of having an interview with the Secretary of State that's off the record? I mean, why would you even take, you would talk to other people who are actually operating.
I'm pretty careful with off the record stuff. I tend not to like to go there because it's like, this isn't doing me any good. Talking to you off the record doesn't do me a lot of good. I can't.
Oh, it does me. I do that a lot. Take information off the record. Then I sometimes forget that I got it off the record, and then I end up using it. So it works out great.
I don't like to do it,
print is so much harder than electronic. I'm telling you guys.
What would happen if the Foreign Correspondents Association decided they were going to just say, tell all their members, look, no one's going on this Pompeo trip. He can go over there, and we're just not going to cover it.
I wondered when Jim Acosta went down. Remember that? Doesn't that sound like years ago? It was a few years ago. I kept wondering if the media would say, no, you answer that question before any of us ask the next question.
Yes,
it was a fair question, but that never happens. There's never that esprit to core out there. I guess none of them want to be the guy that missed the opportunity, so they all stick to their own talking points. We are out of time, guys. By the way, I just saw the screener of, at the screening room here in Chicago, The Assistant, the movie kind of about what Harvey Weinstein's assistant's life was like. It's really good. It stars the young lady that was the brains in the family in the TV series Ozark. Have you watched Ozark?
Yeah. She's a great actress.
And that young gal with the blonde hair who's kind of a hick from the woods but is really clever and
Isn't
smart.
Isn't she British, too? Does she put on
I
that
think
accent
she
for
is.
That show, right?
I think so. With all the She's good, when in doubt, they're British now. And every scene, she is the assistant, and she's in every scene, and it's her movie. It's one of those movies that people are going to say, I kept waiting for something to happen. It's kind of got a slow pace. She's cleaning the dishes in the sink. You see her thoroughly clean the dishes in the sink. And then something else happens, very measured. And you, okay, when's somebody going to start talking here? That never happens in this movie. But it's, you really feel what it must be like for some women out there. The assistant.
By the way, you mentioned the coronavirus. I just want to be on record as against it.
Yeah. I can have an opinion about that, too. Yes. I'm totally against it.
Austin, Lisa, Eric, thank you for coming in. Steve Bertrand had to exit stage left. I'm John Williams. We're produced by Elif Garris and Ashley Byhun this week. And we'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.